Thank you, folks. I'm going to rattle through the meeting reminders, which is please remember to listen to the similarities and not the differences, and please remember to mute your microphones when not sharing. We're happy for attendees to post in the text box, but please keep your messages positive in an atmosphere of recovery, and if you need to talk to each other, take it to IM. If you don't have an internet connection, you can phone us on 01416288262. And all the details for that are on the website, and if you know anybody that might benefit from that opportunity, please let them know. And we're having a bit of a change up tonight because it's our fifth birthday, and we've got Jim has very, very kindly at very short notice agreed to do us a special share to help us celebrate that date. And so we're not going to have a living clean reading tonight, but we will do the usual one. So I'm going to ask if people would join in and help us by doing some readings. So would someone like to read Who is an Addict?
I'm an addict. My name is Jay.
Thank you, Jay.
Who is an addict? Most of us didn't have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life in thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same, jails, institutions, and death. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. Would someone like to take on what is the Narcotics Anonymous program?
My name is Jim.
Okay. Go ahead, Jim.
Go, Jim.
What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a non-profit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who must meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you've done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah.
And perhaps someone would like to read why we're here.
Steve, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, guys. Why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide, but addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until in desperation we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point and recovery is then possible. Thank you. Go ahead.
Steve. Like
Thanks,
to
Steve.
How it works. I can do that. I'm an addict and my name's Steve. How it works.
Hi, Steve.
Steve.
You want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it and you're ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. Step one, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Step four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all his defects of character. Step seven, we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Step eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, we continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order and we can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. There is one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. With these, we are well on our way. We feel that our approach to the disease of addiction is completely realistic, for the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We feel that our way is practical, for one addict can best understand and help another addict. We believe that the sooner we face our problems within our society and everyday living, just that much faster do we become acceptable, responsible and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is not to take the first drug. If you are like us, you know that one is too many and a thousand never enough. We put a great emphasis on this, for we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before we came to NA, many of us viewed alcohol separately, but we cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. We are people with a diseased addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover. Thanks, folks. And I'll be honest, I'm sat here and I'm actually feeling quite emotional tonight.
Thanks, Dave.
I don't think any of us that first started this meeting 5 years ago tonight ever dreamed that it would become what it's become, which is a kind of global family of the most incredible people. And that, you know, that somehow or another, this group has grown and grown and grown, and I'm deeply humbled by that in all kinds of ways. I'm incredibly grateful for it in all kinds of ways. And it's with absolute pleasure this evening that Jim has actually, at the very, very last minute, and I mean even 60 seconds before the meeting started, has agreed to share with us his experience, strength and hope, and to help us celebrate. And I've got to say that Jim is one of the newer members in our little family of trusted servants to these meetings, and Jim's contribution has been enormous, and he's incredibly valued on all kinds of different levels, and he's one of the few people in these groups that I've actually had the pleasure of meeting put in person. And so I'm going to hand it over to Jim, and he's going to share with us on for 20 or 30 minutes. Tell us his story and his experience. So, Jim, it's all yours, mate. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Steve, for chairing, and Jay for, you know, the wonderful service you put in here. Both of you, actually. My name's Jim, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Jim.
Hello, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
I've always wanted to do this. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now those days have gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. I've just been listening to music, as you've probably gathered. But I was thinking just before I came into the meeting, you know, that's really where I started in Narcotics Anonymous, when I had the humility, like Steve said, to hold my hand up and ask for help. And and I got it, you know, in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, Narcotics Anonymous saved my life, you know, literally saved my life. Because at the end, I was working, playing music that I didn't particularly enjoy and wasn't particularly into. But it was paying me a lot of money per week, and I'd gone up to Glasgow to play a residency in a club in Govan, and I was staying in the cheapest possible accommodation that I could get. It was a bed and breakfast called the Ski and Do, and if anybody up in the Highlands and Islands, the Ski and Do is a little dagger that they have in their stockings when you're wearing a kilt. The Ski and Do guest house, I remember, and there were six beds in the room I was staying in, a one bar fire in the corner and a bare light bulb in the middle of the room. It was one of those places where you had to put your boots in the bottom legs of your bed or else you'd lose your boots, you know. And I'd finished the residency in this place, and it was the Monday morning, and I was kind of moving out. Now, in those days, what my routine in the morning was a pint glass half full of Jack Daniels and half full of milk, which I got down first. And then I started on the pills and powders. I heard my head say, because the residency was over, I heard my head say, thank God I don't have to play the drums today. And I had a kind of moment of clarity, you know, because, you know, drums had been my life, really. You know, it was something that I loved doing, and it was something that you know, I was making a living at, you know. But by then, you know, my addiction had got really, really out of control. I moved down to London in the 1960s, kind of in the middle of 1968, actually. I'd been down up and down before. And I did it really to get back at my father, because when I was eight, my parents sent me away to a private school, what we call here in England a prep school, and I was I was a very pretty boy then, you know. I had curly hair, long eyelashes, and you sent away to school when you were eight, And for the first 12 weeks term, you know, your parents don't see you. For the first term, you're just kind of cut off. And unfortunately, the chaplain at the school was, well, there's only one word for it. He was a paedophile, and I got, you know, and I won't go into that. But what that did do was set up a misdirected resentment against, well, everybody really, but more specifically, my parents. From then on, really, I, you know, rebelled, you know, that was it. You know, I wanted to be everything that my parents, the complete opposite of what my parents wanted to be, me to be, I think. And I started smoking when I was about 10 or 11 with those guys. And then, you know, they introduced me to cheap sherry, which you could get bottles of sherry in those days for about 4 and 6, you know, which is, you know, which is about 20p or something nowadays, isn't it? Or 50p or something. I used to get really, really drunk, and in trouble, you know. And towards the end of that stint, when I was 13, I had to take an examination to get me into an English public school. And
hello,
good evening, welcome. And I got into an English public school. Public school, I, you know, really hit it because I got in with the same kind of crowd that I did at the prep school, you know. But these guys, this was kind of 1963, 1964. You know, these guys were smoking cannabis and listening to soul music and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I did my A-levels there and got 3 A-levels, God knows how, you know, because, you know, I didn't work particularly hard. And my father really wanted me to go to university because he'd never had the chance to go to university, you know. And to spite him because of the big resentment I had, I got offered places at university to study languages, and my father was really pleased. And then I told him in early 1968 that I was going down to London with a rock and roll band, and, you know, and he could stuff university where the sun didn't shine, you know. And so I got to London in the middle of 1968, and I don't really need to say anything else about my using, you know, just, I, you know, London in the 60s and on and on and on, and sex and drugs and rock and roll, until that night in the Ski and Do guest house, you know, when I had a kind of moment of clarity. And I got back down south and started talking to a few people about, I was in a bad way and I had to go to the friends. And they suggested, you know, maybe that, you know, I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I kind of started off there. Then I got kicked out of my flat, and the only thing that I thought of doing was coming home, really. So I came home for a while, back up to to Preston here. And I stayed with a friend. Sorry, not Preston. I came up and stayed in Lancaster. Stayed with a friend, and I used to go to, you know, AA because, you know, I decided that the Jack Daniels was the problem, you know. And I used to go to AA, and I used to sit in AA meetings, and I used to say, my name's Jim, and I'm an alcoholic. I haven't had a drink today. Sniff, sniff, sniff. But I'm feeling really good, you know. And then the chairman would say, does anybody want to share? Yeah, me. And I came in, blah, 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 blah. You know, still taking cocaine and speed. So those are my main three poisons, you know. ASC, I call it, you know, which to some people probably means the Area Service Committee. But for me, it's alcohol, speed and cocaine. And all the rest of the stuff that I took. During my time at Alcoholics Anonymous, an old guy, bless him, who's, you know, may rest in peace, he's gone now. But he pulled me to one side and he said, Jim, do you mind if I ask you a personal question? You know, are you on something? And I used to really like to hear him share because he was an ex-army guy, you know. He'd been in Borneo and places, you know, and he used to share about, you know, terrorizing through the jungle with a bottle of whiskey in one hand and an automatic rifle in the other, you know. And I did the first five steps with him. In AA, and I lied mostly, but I did, you know. By then I had to mention, you know, my kind of drug use to it because I'd already admitted, you know, that I was. And he said, well, you need to go to Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And I'd never heard of Narcotics Anonymous, but he and a friend of his who had a car drove me to 90 meetings in 90 days, you know. And at the same time, my father had a nervous breakdown. I was back down south and up and back and up. My father was a self-made kind of businessman, you know. He left school when he was 11 and he went into business with his brother and they never got on. And it was, you know, towards the end, he just collapsed and he had a nervous breakdown. I'll never forget that. I'll never forget seeing him sat in his chair like a mouse, you know, he was broken, you know, broken. And, but by then, you know, I'd been taken, you know, this was during the time when, these guys were taking me to meetings, you know, and I was slowly getting the message, you know. I was slowly getting the message, and I realized, and I'm ever so grateful for this now, and part of this share, I think now, what's coming into the back of my head is, you know, the redemption, really. You know, I began to redeem myself, you know, with the help of people in Narcotics Anonymous and with the help of these guys, you know. I'll be eternally grateful to old Bill there from Lancaster, fantastic man, an amazing man. And it was strongly suggested to me that I get a sponsor in NA and start and do the steps, you know. And during this time when these guys were driving me around to 90 meetings in 90 days, I heard my sponsor. I heard him talking in meetings, and it was just that kind of, you know, I found out that he had a lot of time in, you know, which was suggested to me, you know, find somebody who's been there, done it, and, you know, done the steps and et cetera, et cetera. And he, you know, he was an old timer. And I finally plucked up enough courage to ask him to be my sponsor. And that was in 1997. And he's been my sponsor ever since, you know. You know, for over 19 years, I've been very lucky with that. And he's probably, I mean, he's not only my sponsor, he's probably, you know, one of my best ever friends. He's the one person on this planet that knows more about me than anybody, you know. And I started doing the steps with him. Now, as you can imagine, you know, my opinion of organized religion from the time that I went to prep school, you know, I have no truck with organized religion, you know. And then I was kind of full of myself, you know, and I was reading the literature, which was suggested, you know, step one, two, and three. And but as soon as I saw the word God, you know, I this was before I met my sponsor. You know, I just used to run. I used to use it as an excuse to leave, you know. I was a really angry, violent, nasty person when I first came into these rooms. I used to have people up against the wall and stuff, you know, and really what I was hoping that somebody would do was in Narcotics Anonymous was tell me to go away, you know, because I wanted to use again. Could you mute your microphones, please? Thank you. I wanted to use again, you know. I used every excuse in the book to use again, you know, until I really got down to doing the steps. My sponsor took me. I've shared this before, but I think this was a big moment for me because I was having a lot of problems getting a higher power, a power greater than me, you know. And my sponsor took me to a European convention, my very first Narcotics Anonymous convention in Manchester, a big hotel on Oxford Road. And I'll never forget, there was a guy from Washington, D.C. sharing. He said, you know, my name's so-and-so and I'm an addict. And I just want to start by saying, if I was up here and all my problems had come on top of me and I was feeling really low, and I was wanting to use, and I was just about to use, how many people in this room would be willing to help me? Now, there was about 1,000 people there. And when he said that, every hand nearly in the room shot up. Every time I share this, I get kind of goosebumps, you know, because I kind of relive that. And, it was like that moment in Close Encounters, you know, when all the Indians are on the top of the hill, you know, and they just all their hands shot up. And my sponsor was sat next to me, and he dug me in the ribs, and he said, "Jim, there's a power greater than you. You know, I know you've been acting as if, you know, but there's a power greater than you." And that got me in full. That got me in good stead, you know. I suddenly started realizing that there was something that had brought me here and something that had looked after me in, you know, believe you me, you know, when I first started using up until 1997, you know, I lived a very, very, very dangerous life, you know. and something had looked after me, you know. I mean, first of all, for example, how the hell I stayed out of prison, I have no idea, you know, for some of the stuff that I was getting into in the. And so, yes, I did the steps. I was still looking after my father. I was getting, kind of 2 weeks off here. I had, made quite a bit of money. Early on, and I spent it on buying a place over in the Bahamas, a kind of timeshare week in September, a nice place called the Sunset Villas, and on Paradise Island, just across the bridge from Nassau in the Bahamas. And I shared this the other night, but this is an example of how Narcotics Anonymous is. I said to my sponsor, you know, that for the first 3 years of my recovery, I didn't want to go over there because, you know, there are a lot of temptations for a boy like me over there, you know, the corner boys and the ladies and the Puerto Rican guys, you know, and the people that I used to associate with. He said, well, you know, go. He said, ring the World Service up, you know, ring the World Service up and see if there's any meetings there, you know. And there was three meetings a week, and it was called the Sunshine Group, And so I went September, about 4 years into my recovery. And as soon as I got there, they had a helpline, and I rang the helpline, and this guy answered the phone, and he said, "Hello, my name's Essence, and I love you." So the guy answered the phone, and I was in, you know, the Sunshine Group, which was in a bit of a naughty part of town. In fact, all the people, you know, all my friends over there would say, "What, really? You're going over there, really?" And it was in the basement of a church hall, and I walked in, and believe you me, you know, some of the characters in there, I was the only white guy there. But they, you know, they took me in. And the year after that, when I went back in the September, I was in the swimming pool, and a friend of mine came out, and he said, there's a phone call for you. And I went in, and somebody told me that my father had died. Of course, I wanted to go home straight away, but I couldn't because there was a hurricane on the way. My father died on a Tuesday, and I had to wait until the Friday to leave. Now, in between time, the people in the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous over there, you know, there was one or two people came around to see me every day until that Friday. And then they saw me off at the airport, you know. People would come around and offer me lifts to the meeting and stuff, you know. And I had a car, you know. And all I realized was that those guys helped me through that, Well, I still want to talk about redemption, you know, the Christmas before my father died. I mean, my family, my mum was, you know, kind of very tactile. She used to hug me and stuff, you know, especially when I started straightening up and everything. I looked after her as well until she died. But the redemption part of this is the Christmas before that, I'd, because I was living with my parents then, by then, and the Christmas before that, I'd cook meal, I'd cook the Christmas meal for them, and my brother came round, my younger brother, who I also looked after, until he died, unfortunately. But I will never forget this. I my father was not a tactile person, you know. And by then, I think I was about, 4 or 5 years clean, something like that. Maybe more. 2003, 6 years clean. 2003, 6 years clean. And I made the Christmas dinner, and we all sat around. It was nice. And like I say, my father wasn't a very tactile person, but at the end of the meal, he got up from his chair and he walked round and he just ruffled the top of my head, you know, just ruffled my hair, you know. And, God, it gets me every time I do this. He just ruffled the top of my hair and said, "Jim, you're a real good lad." You know? Now, that, you know, when I look back on that, that's kind of redemption, you know, for me. And it's all down to Narcotics Anonymous, you know. Like I say, I was able to make amends to my father. I looked after him. And then my mother, she got Parkinson's disease and dementia. And my brother was a farmer. You know, I come from a big kind of farming family up here. He got gangrene and he had to have both legs amputated, one above and one below the knee, and he had to give up farming, and I think it just broke his heart, you know, and because that's, he was into that all his life, he used to love it, you know. And so, you know, if I hadn't got clean when I'd got clean, you know, I wouldn't have been able to make those amends, and I wouldn't have been able to sit down with my parents and realize that all my resentment, my anger, my rage, my, you know, which was aimed towards them, and believe you me, over those years when I was using, I was vicious to them, vicious, you know. One of the things that my father used to say to me was, you know, after I'd been in London for a while, you know, you're never going to make anything of yourself, you know, you just, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember a few years later bringing up an accountant's statement, because I'd made a heck of a lot of money that year, you know, and I brought up an accountant's statement and I showed it to him and I said, "There, okay, I've made more money than you this year." That's how vicious I was, you know. And for no reason, you know. For absolutely no reason. Because what I had, what I hadn't realized was that all my resentments were completely misdirected, you know. And I dealt with that in 4 and 5, you know. All my resentments were completely misdirected towards my parents. You know, I'm not the person who perpetrated the abuse, you know. So I'm just so grateful that I was able to redeem myself, you know, redeem myself. You know, my parents were very religious people. Towards the end, my dad used to call me the prodigal son, you know. It's a good Rolling Stones track, actually. You get to about 2007. My mother died in 2005, and my brother died towards the end of 2006. And then in July 2007, I got diagnosed with cancer. I think people in these meetings, I've spoken about it a lot. Prostate cancer, and I'm living with the consequences. I have chronic pain occasionally, and all that kind of stuff, you know. But by then, I'd established a really good relationship with a power greater than me, you know. I did sometimes stand out in the backyard and, you know, railing at the moon and my higher power, you know, kind of, all right, what's next? You know, who am I, Job? You know, what's next? Boils or a plague of locusts or something, you know, what's next kind of thing. But again, you know, with the help of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, the people who helped me back then, you know, my sponsor and other people, I even started off an illness and recovery meeting in Manchester, you know, where I met some fantastic, brave people, you know, and I'm so pleased that I've been able to, seeing as this is the anniversary of the Highlands and Islands, I'm so pleased and privileged that I've been able to set up an illness and recovery meeting on a Thursday, you know, because service, you know, service has always been part of my recovery, you know. I've always done service because that was was suggested to me by my sponsor, you know, go to meetings, do service, you know, get in touch with your higher power on a daily basis, and you know, you can't go wrong. You know, for somebody like me who was just an arrogant, nasty, violent, know-it-all arsehole when I first came in, to be able to take suggestion and do what's required, you know. And do what's required. And right now, I'm going to finish on this right now. I've been through the steps twice with my sponsor, and on Tuesday he's coming round, and I'm gonna hit 1, 2, and 3 again, you know, because I learned early on, you know, that to be a fantastic drummer, I had to practice, and I used to practice 8 hours a day, you know. When I first got down to London, I used to practice and practice and practice. And that's why I was successful for a while, you know. I was successful a while at that. And what I need to do is practice this program, simple spiritual program, you know. A simple spiritual program that I believe, you know, works for very complicated people, you know, and good evening, Roderick. And so grateful. I hope I haven't rambled, and I hope I've been to the point. But what I need to say is, you know, that when I did need help, you know. Help, and I still need help, and that's why I come to these meetings, and I just need to end because it's, you know, the anniversary. I am so grateful for these meetings, so grateful, because, you know, there are days when I can't get out of bed, you know, and I, you know, to have 4 meetings a week, you know, online, you know. Absolutely fantastic. So again, you know, I'm just grateful, you know. That's the end of that. So thank you for asking me, and thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Blinding stuff, mate, and I apologise for dumping that on you at such short notice. But that was a great share and related to an awful lot of it in all kinds of different ways. So, thank you. And hi, Tony, and everybody else that's joined us since the beginning of the meeting. Jim has just done a main share for us to help us celebrate our 5th anniversary. And with that, I'm going to open the meeting for sharing for anybody who'd like to share their experience, strength and hope with us tonight. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
I'm an addict. My name is Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Evening, Jay.
It's thank you, Jim, for sharing your story. I can relate to a lot of it too. And, I'm glad you found us. And you've become quite a contributor to this group. And I remember when I found this meeting. It was, there weren't that many people here. And there weren't this many meetings. And I found this meeting, and I was very happy I found this meeting because I was out looking for different things across the internet. I found online meetings in where I live, in my country, through going back to a meeting list. I was actually looking up where I got the last place I used. I wanted to see how many meetings there were in the town that I had used it, the last town I had used it. Because I got clean 120 miles south of where the last place I used. And when I went back, it was only for a short amount of time, and I didn't really go looking for meetings. And left shortly after that town 6 weeks after my first anniversary and moved to where I am now. And it was really funny because there are two meetings in that town, Narcotics Anonymous, that meet regularly. And the funny thing about it is that one of the meetings is in Dr. Bob's house. He was born in that town. So I found that really humorous that our Narcotics Anonymous meeting is meeting in Dr. Bob Smith's house. And it was like, that's funny. And from finding that, there was a number on that meeting list that said, if you can't make it to a meeting, go call this. And it was a phone number for online meetings. And in looking for that, I found the Skype meetings, and I like the Skype meetings better because in this country, there's many more. I mean, there's phone meetings that have been going on for close to 20 years. Well, yeah, it's 20 years now, but not a lot of Skype meetings. And this technology works better for me because I can see the people in the rooms, whether they're icons or avatars, you know how many people are in a meeting. And for me, that's important. It's not that it's any different than a phone meeting, but it's a little different because I feel more like we're all here together. And you know how many people are in the room. And this meeting led me to another group that I participate in also. And my reality is these meetings are definitely important to my recovery. And I do meetings every day. And I live someplace that if I wanted to go to face-to-face meetings, there's 165 meetings within 25 miles, probably more. There's 165 meetings a week in my area, and I live within, there's another area that's less than 20 miles away, and there's probably 100 meetings there. I choose to do my recovery online. And it might be because I'm a little bit selfish. I like getting up in the morning and being able to go to a meeting. It's a great way to start my day. And I also like the fact that these meetings aren't any bigger than 25 people. Because I think you get more real, or you get, it's easier to get real. And I mean, I've been in this program a couple of days. And when you're in a meeting that's 150 people and it's a discussion meeting, it's just not, I don't get the same thing out of it that I got when I walked into these rooms. And it was 25 people or even 40 people. But the bigger the meetings get, the less recovery I find in the meetings. So at this point in my recovery, this works for me. I'm not going to say it's going to work forever, but at this point in my recovery, I like what I experience here. And I like the fact that I know the people that come to these meetings on a regular basis pretty well. And I consider them a part of my circle. And I've shared a lot more stuff on an intimate level than I would in some of the meetings in my area. I mean, I still go to meetings every once in a while, but it's not the main focus of my recovery anymore. And the reality of it is it's easier to get distracted in a face-to-face meeting than it is online. And I was talking to somebody about that today after the meeting in Australia this morning. And it's just, I mean, this person was talking about not going to enough meetings and needing to do this and needing to do that. And I just said, I mean, I go to a meeting every day, sometimes twice. But I got to go to face to face. And I said, you do what you have to do for yourself. If you're being honest with yourself, and what I do in meetings here is I focus on the meeting. I focus on what people are sharing. I focus on what's happening. I mean, since I've come back to meetings, and I've been back at meetings for a little over 4.5 years, I took a little break. I'm very happy that I didn't go out and use. And I'm very happy that I came back when I was supposed to come back, because my life shifted and my higher power carried me, and it worked the way it was supposed to work. But I focus on the meetings. I mean, I don't, when I walk into a face-to-face meeting, I don't look at my phone. I don't answer my phone. The only time I would answer my phone is if my dad called. And he knows when I go to meetings. If he called and was doing a meeting, it must be important. So he's about the only person, or maybe my brother, but my brother doesn't, we don't call like that. I sit and watch people in face-to-face meetings, and you're sitting there either on Facebook. I mean, they're on the phone. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, they're not that the fact that they're talking on the phone, but if they do the readings off the phone, or if they're using their phone for that after it's done, they're on Facebook. I mean, it's real simple. And you know what? Again, I focus on the meeting. This is a room, and it's no different than in the other meeting. Except we don't have gigantuan people in here, as far as more than 25. And I think that's a good number. And any place, more than 25 is too many. For me. And so I think I'll continue to do what I do, and I'm very grateful that this meeting existed when I walked in the door and Steve was here. He's the only person that was here when I walked in. And the funny thing about it is there wasn't, what was there, 2 meetings a week, Steve, when I got here? Or one?
No, there was 2, I think.
Okay. And now we've doubled in size, and we've doubled in people. I mean, when I got here, it was 3 or 4 of us. And now, any place up to 15, I've seen even 20 of these rooms. And that tells me it's working. And I'll shut up. Because I've already been to a meeting today, and there was a speaker jam down in Australia. And a whole bunch of people shared. And we were able to attend. And that shows me that this program works. And I think the biggest thing that I like about these meetings is the fact that we find out about each other and disease. I found out that the disease is worldwide and recovery is too. So thank you for letting me share. Thank you for being here. Have a great afternoon, a great evening, a great night, depending on where you're at in the universe. Back to you, Steve.
Thank you, Jay.
Thanks, Jay.
Okay, folks, floor is open. And if you'd like to jump in, Anne-Marie, please do. Or anybody else.
Yeah, I'm an addict.
Hi, Anne-Marie.
Right.
Hi, Anne-Marie.
Good to hear you.
Thanks for everyone that's doing service, that's done service and had this meeting available for me to attend. Thanks for your share, Jim. I was born in 1968, and there was you partying her. So... you know, but I was first introduced to drugs. They were prescribed drugs at an astonishingly early age. I was 19 months old, and I'd been in a bad accident, and I was given quite strong analgesics for a very, very long time after that. And so I wasn't far behind you really with you using, but in different ways. There was a few things that you said, you know, there's quite a lot of things that I'm trying to be grateful for, because I'm really struggling to attend face-to-face meetings. I've had a lot of a struggle going on recently. I was on some medication, and then I had some steroid injections, so I came off the medication to see if the steroid injections worked, and at first I didn't seem to be having any withdrawal symptoms or nothing. Yeah, everything seemed to be all right, and then I just had a mental blip last weekend, and I can't bother speaking to anybody. I've just kept myself to myself. I'm struggling with face-to-face stuff, and so I've sat and listened a couple of times to different meetings, and it's a bit strange when you're at home, do you know, because I can get really distracted, I can get excessively frustrated, yes, it's slightly different, you know, when you're in a face-to-face meeting, you're a bit more conscious of other people, you know, and other people's need to share, and whereas you can ignore that when you're on the internet. Thanks, Tony. You can ignore that kind of stuff on here, and don't know how you accidentally press your microphone, but never mind. I'm just really, there's a part in the readings that says, you know, we'll have a few moments silence for the still suffering addict, both inside and outside of the rooms. And I suppose what for people like me, my gratitude comes to people like you, Jim, for all those prayers, you know, because I didn't know there was people praying for me when I was out there, you know, and that there would be somewhere for me to come, no matter how hard it is, you know. And what I struggle to remind myself about is having a hard time doesn't mean there's anything wrong with me, because I can quite quickly think there's something wrong with me when I'm having a hard time. And that's definitely what I'm having at the moment. But I'm glad I've opened my mouth. I am. So thank you for letting me share. And thanks, everyone, for being here and making it a meeting this evening.
Thanks, Anne-Marie.
That's Anne-Marie.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. It's great to hear you again.
Thanks, Anne-Marie.
Okay, folks, floor is free again, so if anyone else would like to share, please do.
Yeah, I'm AD, I haven't heard it.
Hi, AD.
Evening, AD.
Thanks very much for your share, Jim. Thanks, Jay, for hosting me, and thanks, Steve, for taking me, and thanks, everybody, for being here and making this meeting possible. And, you know, it's a lovely share, Jim. You know, it's just kind of a bit like the layer of the onion to sort of get to know you a bit more, even though I kind of feel like that I know you and, you know, identify with so much of it in a different kind of way. I mean, the age gap's one thing, so my era was more rave scene than rock and roll, but, you know, some living a flamboyant, glamorous kind of lifestyle, you know, in the gutter, looking down on the junkies, do you know what I mean? It's like that got pointed out to me in early recovery, that my feeling of being different to other, well, I used to call them junkies, You know, I sold drugs from near on my whole addiction, you know, got high on my own supply, and I definitely didn't think I had a problem. You know, it was, you know, the family, partners, drug squad, police, CID, probation officers, doctors, prescribed, you know, the list is endless. You know, my thoughts were, if these people got off my case, then I could just use and get on with it and stuff. And you know, they've always stayed grateful to probation officers. I mean, I remember, you know, being arrested and busted again and kind of, you know, all pre-sentence reports and all that kind of malarkey. I remember this probation saying, you know, talking to me about the severity of my problem, you know, my denial, delusion and perception around things is just sort of, come on, hurry up, just keep me out of jail and all the, you know, it's just, and she said, I can get you into treatment. And, I, you know, at this time I lived quite, not rural, but rural enough. As I talked to a member a few days, I mean, the only education I had around drugs was Grangeville's ammo. That was the only thing, you know, I didn't come from, you know, a place of streetwise, and, you know, I grew through the progression, becoming more streetwise and stuff, and all the older kind of hippies and kind of travellers and, you know, rock and rollers, the older, you know, and I kind of learned, you know, and they were just robbing chemists and loads of prescribed drugs, and there wasn't street drugs like there was sort of now, so you had to kind of seek. But I remember this probation, I mean, I laugh at myself, I always laugh at myself, because I've heard it kind of shared, but sort of similar and different. I remember she sort of gave me the brochure, and because I'm lazy but also dyslexic, I remember just looking at the pictures and thought, I was like, really, you really want to send me to this place? You know, I don't even know if I listened to her. I just thought, you know what, Elspar prison is a no-brainer. And I remember packing sort of like the belongings I had. Think, you know, I just had this delusion that, you know, I am going to an Elspar, and, you know, I'm going to have cooked breakfasts every morning, a phone next to my bed, I'm going to have a maid in stockings, you know, I just, you know, tennis courts, jacuzzis. I remember getting to this place in Weston-super-Mare, kind of doing the initial paperwork, and then I had to go to the sort of medical centre. And they asked me if I had any prescribed medication. I said, yeah, I've got loads. I've come to an health farm, you know, I've got loads. And they just said, you're not allowed, you know, and they end up like having this tug of war, these health professionals. You know, I'm screaming at them going, they're, it's mine, it's got my name on it, it's all legal. And, oh, dear. But, you know, that was the beginning. You kind of shared about asking for help. Well, I didn't ask for help, you know, it was just a sort of blessing. You know, it was higher power working for other people. I mean, this lovely lady, and I really wanted to seek her out early, and I found out she lived about half a mile from me, but I just didn't feel appropriate to sort of turn up on the doorstep. But, you know, part of me just wanted to show her, do you know what, another sort of 8 years down the road, you know, I got clean and stuff. You know, I didn't last at all long in there. I just sat in groups and thought, boy, these people have got problems, you know all the differences, and, you know, and all that same sort of journey and all that, you know, kind of amends process, and, you know, the shoe being on the other foot and kind of being there for family and stuff like that. And, you know, I sat down with my parents for probably near on 2 hours and kind of done my step nine with them. And then I think they must have shared for about an hour. I think I cried for about an hour. Because the blinkers of what I had seen, you know, they just explained that, you know, the sleepless nights, the arguments, you know, the drain on finances, constantly being in papers and in courts and prison, you know, the list is, you know, it was just my mind was so narrow. And the pinnacle was, all they asked from me was to stay clean a day at a time. And, you know, I've kind of honoured that. You know, I've them days turned into weeks, into months, into years, and kind of beyond wildest dreams and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And generally, I kind of shared it in the times of illness and sort of, you know, I'm struggling around that stuff, but that's, you know, I can't, you know, and some don't know because they weren't here, but, you know, I got sacked on Thursday and my mate come round and, I've just shared it with the closest people, sponsor, you know, one of my sponsors, I've sponsored for near on 13 years and stuff. And, you know, I've been really, you know, as people probably do anyway, but being ill, I've practiced these principles, you know, in all my effort, really, 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 really as hard as I can. And, you know, I've always tried to practice an acceptance and surrender. Just, you know, I've learned, you know, people, places and playgrounds, if I can practice them, then this is a simple program. You know, I'm not trying to control and change and manipulate. If I just kind of, you know, accept that's what it is and surrender to it, then, you know, the next bit of life. And so I spoke to my mate around it and, you know, all these, and I just said, well, what will be, isn't it? I can't change. I've been sacked. You know, medical conditions and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I've struggled 45 years around financial insecurity. I've wrote a whole green and gold around kind of money and stuff, and it doesn't really sort of change for me. It's something very inherent. And so I went with the kid's mum today and sort of bought all the Christmas presents. So I know, because I suddenly thought, was it yesterday? I suddenly thought, God, Christmas just round the corner, and, you know, my money might have just stopped 2 days ago. And so that kind of spoke to the kid's mum, just thought, you know, we'll go and do it now, and then I won't have to sort of be in fear around that kind of stuff. But generally, I'm just really tired with these, the urinology kind of stuff. It just really wipes me out. But, you know, God, I've been through so much in 7 months now, and you know, I've had no desire to use. You know, I'm really grateful. You know, what's been shared, I'm really grateful to these online meetings. You know, I'm really grateful that I found them, and I can't even remember how I found them. I think Steve sent me a message one time, and then sent me another message, if I can remember rightly. He might even sent me another message, but. I'm really glad I found him. I'd be absolutely, you know, I'd be nuts. But yeah, thanks, Jim. Lovely share. Thanks everybody for the meeting. I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Abe.
Thanks, Abe.
Okay, folks, we have a bit of time left before the meeting finishes. So if anyone else would like to jump in and share with us, please do.
Hi, my name's Trudy and I'm an addict.
Hi, Trudy.
Hi, Trudy.
I was keeping a bit quiet in the background. Thank you, Jim, for your share. I'm sorry I came when you'd already started. Like people have said, it's nice getting to know a bit more about people that are sort of here in the, I was going to say see, but here in the meetings and everything. It definitely helps me feel more at ease about sharing a bit more openly and honestly. So thank you. Thank you for being responsible, Jay and Steve, and the share so far. I've had like a mad hour, and I kind of put a SOS out because I couldn't get my sponsor, and I was just in this anger because I'm normally quite, the anger is normally internal. It's something I struggle with. But where my kids are concerned, I am like some sort of psycho pit bull. I don't know. And someone, their dad had upset my eldest daughter today. And I was just, you know, everything that I feel, you know, on a day-to-day basis that I have through work in NA just went totally out the window. And you know, I had these horrible thoughts that I was going to act, not on picking up or anything like that, but I was going to go and get violent. And I'm not a violent person, but I was having these things, and thankfully, due to the online meetings, I've got close to a few people that I didn't really get from the face-to-face meetings for me. So I'm so grateful for the online meetings, because, you know, I tried my sponsor, and I know she's away, and she got back to me after, but, you know, I just sent an SOS out and got someone back who I was able to Skype with, and, you know, my anger is still there, but that, I was going to say moment, it wasn't a moment, it was an hour that I probably ranted at her about stuff, you know. I felt out of control and out of the program, but there must be this inherent practice now that's shifted, that, you know, when I'm feeling unsafe, whatever it is, or in need, you know, I don't turn back to my old habits, whether it's food or, you know, extra pills not to feel, whatever it has been. You know, I turn to just speaking with people and getting myself out of that moment. I'm really, really grateful. I don't really have much else to say, but I just wanted to say I am so grateful, because I can't get to face-to-face meetings. And, you know, when I could get to face-to-face meetings, I was very ill at the time. And I remember a sponsor I had was always saying to me, you know, you've got to go to more meetings. And so, you know, I pushed myself to go to meetings, unfit to drive, because there's only one local. I'm unfit to drive, very resentful that I was having almost to prove myself. I felt that was because she felt I wasn't living in recovery and all this, and I was really angry. But, you know, these have been a blessing to me, these online meetings. So I'm really grateful. Thank you.
Thanks, Trudy.
Thanks, Trudy.
Okay, guys, we have some time left. If anyone else would like to jump in and share, please do.
Hi, it's me here, Tony Serenity, Roderick.
Hi, Roderick.
Hi, TSR.
I'm keeping it quiet tonight. I'm quite serene, and it's quiet, and the lights are off, so please send me some love and love to everyone. That's all I'm going to say. Thank you. God bless everyone.
Thanks for being here, Roderick.
Thanks, Roderick.
Good to hear you, mate. Cool, yeah. I'm going to jump in. I'm an addict, and my name's Steve.
Hi, Steve.
And, thanks, everyone, for sharing tonight. And thank you, Jim, for that amazing share. It was lovely to hear it. And, I've heard little bits and pieces of your story before, but I've never actually heard you put it all together like that. And, I really love the idea of it being about redemption in some way, you know, and that kind of that hit home for me, you know, particularly because pretty much everyone that was close to me in my life had gone before I found recovery, you know. So, you know, you brought a tear to my eye talking about your father patting you on the head. I mean, people, you know, it was a really good share, and it's been a privilege to be able to serve with you since you've been part of these meetings. So I want to thank you for that anyway. I don't know, you know, this, I posted something in a little group on Facebook about this meeting the other day, and it's true to say these meetings started on a resentment and a virtual coffee pot. And it was about autonomy, and it was about kind of wanting to find somewhere that was going to be closer to my experience of the NA that got me clean, you know, which was all about being honest and sharing and living by the traditions of our fellowship, you know, and I wasn't experiencing that in another place that I was involved with. And I've been involved with online meetings in one way or another for about the last 8 years. I think I said at the beginning of the meeting, there was three of us, or two of us, in fact, got together. Myself and a member that was dead living in a little island called Iona, who's since dropped out. We haven't seen or heard from him for a long time, which is very sad. Decided that we'd start this. And I can't begin really to express my gratitude for it. I mean, people that know me know that I live in a little island that's miles away from anywhere. I haven't actually had the opportunity to get to a face-to-face meeting since the spring, really, March. And what other people have shared about the reality that seems to exist in these meetings, which is seems much more, it seems in an odd kind of way, and this sounds a really odd thing to say, but it does seem more real here than some of my experiences in face-to-face meetings. There's someone who shared earlier, I got invited to share at a meeting in their area a couple of years ago, and it was actually bigger than some conventions I've been in the UK, and I felt sad for the fact that individuals in that group were never going to be able to get the opportunity to share. So seeing this meeting grow, and it's you guys. And I think there's been one little period a couple of years ago, a couple of months or so, where I haven't sat in this room on a Saturday night and done service. I ain't going to lie, I do it for me as much as I do it for anybody else, because without this room, especially now because we folded the local face-to-face meeting, without these rooms, I don't have a meeting. I have no connection. And I cherish that. Beyond words, really. Because you guys helped me stay clean. And then to have watched it grown in the way it's gone, to watch this group grown in the way it has in the last 5 years has been just incredibly humbling. And to know that, you know, that the faces, they come and go, you know, I mean, of the little group of us that first started these meetings, there's a couple of us that still keep coming. One of them's our group treasurer, and the other one is our group web servant. He rarely comes to meetings, but I know he's there and I know he cares, because he just updated all the website for us the other day and sent us a message to say, done it, and that's his stuff, and that's, he does what he needs to do. I guess kind of one way or another, outreach has been a part of my recovery for most of my recovery. And I just love you guys. I love the fact that you care enough to actually turn up. I love the fact that you're able to sort of sit in a room and share openly with each other and with me. And I guess, you know, I kind of pray on a day. I just pray that we're still here in another 5 years, whether I'm still here or not, you know. And although I was kind of part of what started this meeting, what I feel in my heart today is that if, you know, God forbid I got run over by a bus tomorrow, these meetings would still be there. And that's a miracle. And it's the nature of NA, and I liked a lot of what you shared, you know, about what NA is, you know, which is about people crying for help and people saying, yeah, we'll help, we're here. And the absolute miracle that alone we can't do it, but together we can. So I'm really grateful for everyone that supports these meetings and does service to these meetings. And thank you. Just thank you. So I'm done. So if anyone else would like to jump in and share, please do.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
I'm Mesmer Addict.
Hi, Mez.
Hiya, thank you for the meeting. Thank you to everybody that's done service, and thank you for your share, Jim. I just want to quickly connect with the meeting, really. It gave me a lot of gratitude listening to your share and inspirational. And I'm grateful for the meetings as well. When I've been really, really struggling, it's been good to be able to get on online meetings when I'm really isolated and stuck. So I just wanted to quickly come in. Thank you.
Thanks, Mez.
Thanks, Mez. Good job.
Okay, folks, we've pretty much come up to the end of the sharing time, and if anything else, there's anybody else left out there that would like to just identify quickly with the meeting, say hello.
Okay, I'm Steve, I'm an addict.
Hi, Steve.
Thanks for your share. You know, the most important message that I heard was about help and asking for help. Being humble enough to ask for help and being desperate enough to ask for help is the way I see it. Knowing that we can't do this stuff on our own. Yeah, I'll leave it there. Thank you for the meeting.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, folks, we have kind of come up to the end of sharing, but not quite the end of the meeting. We're going to end in the usual way. I'm going to ask if someone could please read us the traditions.
I'm Mesman Abbott.
Hi, Mez.
Hiya. The 12 traditions of NA. We keep what we have only with vigilance, and just as feeding for the group, for the individual, comes from the 12 steps, so feeding from the group springs from our tradition. As long as the ties that bind us together are stronger than those that will tear us apart, all will be well. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. 2. For our group purposes, but 1 ultimate authority. A loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. 5. Each group has one primary purpose, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. 6. An NA group ought never endorse, finance or lend the NA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every NA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Narcotics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centres may employ special workers. 9. Each NA, as such, ought never be organised, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Narcotics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the NA name, but never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Every mind is placed, principles before personalities. Understanding these... Oh, I've lost it. Personal recovery depends on NA unity, and that unity depends on how well we follow our traditions. The 12 traditions of NA are not negotiable. They are the guidelines that keep our fellowship alive and free. By following these guidelines in our dealings with others and society at large, we avoid many problems. That is not to say that our traditions eliminate all problems. We have to face difficulties as they arise, communication problems, differences of opinions, internal controversies, and troubles with individuals outside the fellowship. However, when we apply these principles, we avoid some of the pitfalls. Many of our problems are like those that our predecessors had to face. Their hard won experience gave birth to the traditions. Experience has shown that these principles are valid today. When these traditions were formulated, our traditions protect us from the internal and external forces that could destroy us. They are truly the ties that bind us together. It's on the understanding and application of that they work. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Mez. I know it's tricky when the screen is leaping up and down. Okay, guys, so Tradition 7, pass in the virtual park, which every LE group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. If you'd like to make a contribution and you're in the UK, you can go to any branch of the TSB giving those details and do so. Or alternatively, or if you're outside the UK, you can go to either of the pages listed there, and you'll find a PayPal donations button. All deposits made to that account not used to support the group afforded to our local area and area service committees help support local and national NA services, etc. And we celebrate clean time in this meeting. So I'm going to ask if anybody's got a clean time milestone today or this week for multiple years of recovery. Is anybody in here tonight or this week celebrating 18 months of recovery? Or 1 year, or 6 months, or 90 days, or is anybody today or this week celebrating 60 days, or 30 days, or anybody at their first meeting, 24 hours clean, wants a new way of life, please keep coming back, and there's a link there for anybody that wants to pull up a copy of their clean tag. And perhaps we'll just wind up the meeting by asking someone if they could lead us. We do repent.
Steve, I'm an addict.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
I'm just looking for it, guys. Scroll. Can't see it posted. Tradition 7. Clean time countdown. You're done.
Bottom of the page, all the way to the bottom, Steve.
I've got it now, yeah. We do recover. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous. And thanks, Jay.
Thank you, Steve.
Steve. Okay, folks, it just remains for me to thank everyone for being here. Thank you, Jay, for hosting the call. Thank you, everybody else that does service to the Highlands and Islands group of meetings. And especially thank you, Jim, for your share. That's short notice. You're a hero. And would you all please join me in a moment's silence for the still suffering addict in and out of these rooms? And please spare a thought for the addict who may die today, never having had the opportunity to experience the freedom of the 12 steps and spiritual principles of Narcotics Anonymous. Would you all join me in the wee version of the Serenity Prayer, using the word God as you understand him or it to be God?
God, we can change the things we can.
And the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
Thank you so much. Come back and work the 11.